Well, welcome once again to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH. And I have a situation I've never had before. My guest is stuck in traffic and will be here in just a few minutes. So let's talk about a few things that are going on in the community. First of all, in front of me, I have here that the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, in partnership with Logos Christian Ministries, has a free produce market the second Saturday of every month. It goes from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Logos Christian Ministries is located at 582 Lee Street in Marion. They have free fresh food. That can be a tongue twister right there. Free fresh food. Free fresh. I can do it. To local individuals and families in need. No appointment, pre-registration, or paperwork is required. Individuals simply will be asked to sign in at the produce market and provide name and number of people in their family. So it says you must be income eligible. So that is the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Again, the second Saturday of every month from 12 to 2 at Logos Christian Ministries, 582 Lee Street in Marion. And let's see here. The Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 1117 has a breakfast the last Saturday of the month. That's from 7:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. And that'll be held at the VFW Post 7201, 1614 Marion Marysville Road, and it is open to the public. Marion Marysville Road, of course, is Route 4 South, so keep that in mind. Got one here from, let's see, this has to do with Alzheimer's. There's an Alzheimer's Crafts for a Cure craft and vendor show that will be Saturday, October 5th, starting at 9 and ending at 3 at Isla Grande Farm. Excuse me. Excuse me. That's at 2730 Harding Highway West in Marion. Again, that's the Alzheimer's Crafts for a Cure craft and vendor show. They have crafts, food, and raffles at the Isla Grande Farm. That'll be October 5th, which is a Saturday from 9 to 3. And again, the address is 2730 Harding Highway West in Marion. So keep that in mind, folks. A few things going on with the Tall Grass Trail. Let's see. You've got the September calendar in front of me. Let's see. Today's the 16th. Let's go to the 19th. There will be bird watching at Myers Woods Nature at 8 a.m. That's this Thursday. And 20th Friday will be a night hike at the Tall Grass Trail at 9 p.m. Please bring a red flashlight. Geared for all ages. And Terry Tackett just joined me. Let's see, he's on the orange microphone, which is number 3. So let's turn Terry up. Hey, Terry.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm just talking about some things going on
making some announcements.
Yes, we are.
All right, good.
I'm going to head downstairs in a minute to make sure that our guest gets in, who might be down there knocking at the door right now. So there will be a park board meeting at 12 p.m. at the Marion Tall Grass Trail. Okay, Terry's going to go down and make sure our guest gets in. So, and that'll be this Saturday. And there will be also on Saturday a Marion. On the desk, Terry. Marion, this new building, we have to, after 5 o'clock, we have to let people in. So Terry's heading downstairs right now to let Fred Malone in. But this coming Saturday, the 21st, the Marion, Ohio Weather Hike Series will be at the Marion Tallgrass Trail. Use the Decliff parking lot. That'll be from 12 to 2. That could be an interesting event. And it is pawpaw season. So on the 23rd, next Monday, will be the pawpaw program at 5:30 p.m. at Paradise Nature Preserve. That's over by Caledonia. And I'll tell you what, I got a chance to go over there recently and take a tour of that paradise, and it is absolutely beautiful. So you might want to stop over there. I believe that's on Whetstone River Road. So Stop over there near Caledonia. You can actually go on Facebook, I do believe, and find out more about Terradice. Again, the Pawpaw program will be next Monday at 5:30 at Terradice Nature Preserve. Looking ahead further into next week, on the 25th, Friends of the Prairie Park meeting at 7 p.m. The meeting is at Heritage Hall in Marion. Enter via the lower level door on State Street. So if you want to become a part of the Friends of the Prairie Park, there's a meeting next Wednesday at 7 p.m. at Heritage Hall over on the corner of Church and is that Prospect? Church and Prospect over there. And the 28th, a week from this coming Saturday, will be the Fall Festival. That'll be going on from 1 to 4 p.m. Come out for some fun and enjoy all the fall activities. It doesn't say where that is, so you might want to go online, check out the Marion Park District, and I'm sure that information will be there. And guess who just walked in? It is Fred Malone.
Which one?
The orange one there, Fred.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Fred.
Not only couldn't I not get through Delaware, I hit every light red coming from the highway in.
Imagine that. Yeah, and I've gone through every public announcement that we had here, so your
listening.
Timing's perfect.
I was listening.
But before we get started, I would like to give a big shout-out to Signs and Logos at 216 North Main Street here in Marion for being a supporter of WWGH. They made some beautiful shirts for the staff here, and we most certainly appreciate it. So again, Signs and Logos, and tell them that you heard about them on the air.
Heard it here first.
Yes.
Where's Signs Logo? Where are they located?
It's at 216 North Main. It's near Streetwise Motors.
Well, it's in the second block of North Main Street then.
Yeah. Right, there you go.
Is that a new business?
No, they've been around a while.
Oh, have they?
They've been around a while, but they've recently given us some support and some help.
Oh, good.
With these shirts, and where we will wear them proudly.
Great. Hey, that's good news. Well, this is a nice dig you got here.
It is. It's your first time in the studio, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I have not been able to do Charlie's show the last couple of times. I've either been... Oh, those are nice. Yeah. I've either been here or there or, you know, I don't know. For somebody that's retired, I seem to be awfully...
That makes you more busy, doesn't it?
Coming and going here on occasion. So. And you know how that is. I've sucked you into several things, too.
You have. Somehow you do that.
By the way, missed you at the last barn dance, just to throw that
But
we had a very small crowd.
That happened to be during the Morrow County Fair, and I'm kind of tied up there. So.
Oh, well, sure. That's understandable. Well, that was actually an extra one, Mike. That was the special one that we had to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the rebuilding of the barn.
Right.
That burnt back in 93. But we only had 100 people there at the dance that night. I was a little bit disappointed.
Oh, that is low.
But that made that makes us have 7 for the season instead of our normal 6. So I would assume that the next one, which is the last weekend of September, which is Ohio Heritage Days, one of our biggest activities that takes place at Malabar, we'll have a big crowd that night. We usually have a lot of the people that camp over and people that are vendors that are staying in the area, and like the Civil War reenactor guys and the guys over in the Frontier Camp and that kind of thing. They usually
Did we mention that we're talking about Malabar Farm?
I think I did mention Malabar.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
You'll have to forgive me. As they used to say on Saturday Night Live, I'm a bit perplexed at this point.
Okay, we'll go with that.
But I think we'll have a bigger turnout at this last barn dance. And by the way, anybody that's interested, I didn't mean to talk about Malabar tonight, but I'll throw that out. If you've never been to a Malabar barn barn dance at Malabar Farm, you might want to think about taking one in. And our next one is the last weekend of the month. I'm not sure. It's 26th, 27th, whatever that date is.
28th.
The last Saturday. Thank you. The last Saturday of September. It's a dollar, a menial fee of $1 just to help defray some of the costs of the band and so forth. But they take place in the big barn at Malabar Farm State Park, right across from the Lloyd Brumfield's big house. And they're a lot of fun. And usually through the summer, we get crowds of 250, 300 people there, as you well know. So we have concessions, and there's always plenty to eat, plenty to drink, and you have a good time. So anyway, that's my Malabar announcement. So not what I intended to talk about.
That's fine, though. I'm glad you did. I might be there helping sell concessions that night, too, so... Stop in and see us.
Yeah. Well, and again, like I said, that's the same weekend as the big Ohio Heritage Days, and that's a big festival that takes place on both the Saturday and Sunday of that weekend. I think it starts like 9 o'clock in the morning, runs till 5 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And there's all kind of crafters there, and they've got demonstrations. There's always a Civil War reenactment and what I call the coonskin camp. Those people are there. Just a lot of stuff going on. So, anyway. So, what I know we don't have very much time to have your first
we
break,
have so. It's well we don't have a break on this show so
oh, okay so I don't have to worry about
so
that.
Yeah you
all
have
right,
a half an hour and 3 minutes.
All right, great.
33 minutes.
Well, a couple things I wanted to touch on tonight. I specifically have wanted to talk about the Dinner with the Presidents, which is coming up for the Marion County Historical Society. So I guess I'll lead off with that, and then I'll talk
am
about
I helping with that one.
I think you're part of the guard this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Because I don't have you down as your normal president.
So no, I'm not going to be a president this year.
I think you're part of the guard this year. Meet and dine with presidents of the United States. I think, Mike, if I'm not mistaken, this is either the 12th or 13th year that we've done this. It's getting up there. This year's event is on Saturday, November the 2nd. It'll be out at Dayspring Wesleyan Church, same location it was last year, if you happen to be one of those lucky folks that attended. Since this is our 12th or 13th annual, and I'll have to check the next time I come on, hopefully I'll be on before November, to tell you exactly what number it is. But if you've never been to one of these events, they're a fabulous event. It's a big event for the Historical Society, one of our chief fundraisers throughout the year. And what you will be seeing or witnessing that night is an opportunity to have a gala reception and a dinner with a number of former U.S. presidents. Now, what we do every year is we feature four U.S. presidents, and then we'll have a number of other presidents that are available in the audience that will not be taking part as far as having a speaking part in the program. And this year, our speaking presidents are James Garfield, who was the 20th president of the United States. Unfortunately, he was assassinated before he was able to complete his term. In fact, he was assassinated very early on in his term, about halfway through his first year. He met with an assassin's bullet. And Chester Arthur took over for him, as you'll recall. So he will be speaking this year. Teddy Roosevelt, who's always a popular figure at our dinners, will have an opportunity to be one of our speakers this year. He's the 26th president, and of course, he is who took over after William McKinley was unfortunately assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a coincidence.
That's a pattern.
I didn't pick these guys intentionally because they, you know, they succeeded somebody that happened to get shot in the line of duty. But Teddy Roosevelt will be talking, and he's always a lot of fun. Warren Harding, of course, our 29th president of the United States, a Marion star, I guess I should say. He'll have an opportunity to speak this year. And then finally, Dwight Eisenhower, the 34th president of the United States, will be our final speaker. Now, with this dinner, you will get, or with this evening, you will get a buffet dinner. And as has been in the past, all of our buffet dinners will be featuring foods that the speaking presidents ate while they were in the White House. And we use all the original recipes taken from the White House cookbooks, and the girls at the museum start in about March of the year preparing the menu for the November dinner. So it takes a lot of planning to do this and a lot of research. And we get some interesting foods, as you well know, Mike.
Oh,
yes. You've been there before. You've
yes.
been a speaking president. You've been taking place as part of the affair. So you never know what you're going to get to eat at these things, because some of the recipes, especially for some of the earlier presidents, were quite different. I remember, you know, we've had like a cucumber salad, we've had corn pone, and we've had just unusual things that you might not necessarily see on a menu if you go out to dinner today, which is what really kind of makes the event fun. And as you go through the buffet line, there will be placards there to tell you what each particular dish is. And I will say this, we're not using any roadkill, so don't get excited about you know, what might be in the pans. The caterer that we use, if she cannot find the items that might have been used, say, in the early 1800s, she'll substitute something very close to that item. But we don't use any you know, raccoon or any groundhog or anything like that in any of these meals. So you don't have to worry about that. Non-speaking presidents this year. I have quite a few. I've got George Washington, who was the first president, of course, of the United States. Zachary Taylor, the 12th president, who hasn't been a guest for a couple of years. So that will be interesting to have him there. Ulysses Grant, 18th president, who's always very entertaining. He always has some great stories to tell. So if you happen to get lucky enough to sit at his table, I'm sure you'll be entertained during dinner.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Oh, yes. I've had President Grant on my show before.
No doubt. Yeah. Benjamin Harrison, the 23rd president. Harry S. Truman, always a big hit. A lot of our people that attend our dinners, of course, are older folks, and they do remember when Harry Truman was in the White House. I remember, you know, when Harry Truman was in the White House. So he's always a big hit. James Madison. We haven't had James Madison for a couple of years, so he's back on the dais this year. Andrew Johnson, the 17th president of the United States.
He took over for Lincoln, right?
Yes, he did. And Chester A. Arthur, who was the 21st president. And he, as I mentioned earlier, took over for James Garfield when he was assassinated. We do have a special guest this year who is going to remain a secret. So I'm not telling anything about him other than he is a figure from history. And I doubt that if anybody in our audience, unless they are a real, real history buff, will know anything about this gentleman.
Really?
Really. So, and I'm this is my teaser. So if you want to find out who this really special guest is, you'll have to buy a ticket and come to the dinner.
Now, is a certain lady from our community also going to speak?
She is, and she was next on my list to introduce. Our special guest speaker, who will actually lead off before the speaking presidents, is our own Mary Ellen Withrow, the 40th Treasurer of the United States, who served from 1994 to 2001 under Bill Clinton. So Mary Ellen will be with us again this year. We're so happy to have her and very well pleased that she has accepted our invitation again this year. So you get all that. And this year, Master of Ceremonies will be James Cox, who was the 46th and the 48th governor of Ohio.
Okay.
And yes. Who also was a candidate for president in 1920 and ran against Warren Harding.
Oh, wow.
So there could be some banter between James Cox and Warren Harding, because, of course, Harding defeated Cox, and I'm sure Cox isn't very happy about the whole situation and probably still is holding a bit of a grudge, even though, you know, he'd already lost the election but still won the governorship again. So anyway, those are the people that will be there. Again, seating is limited as always. I think the last I checked, we had sold somewhere around 175 tickets already, and we're limited to 300 people. I don't really know if there's any available seating left with any of the presidents. They usually go first. So at this stage of the game, September the 16th, you may not get to sit with the president, but still you'll be in close proximity to one. And the presidents usually make a habit of wandering around and talking to the tables that don't have presidents. And again, you'll get to hear the speaking presidents and our special guests and also Mary Ellen Withrow, too. And you get that fine buffet dinner. And we've been using the same caterer for the last 11 or 12 years, and they do a very, very good job. Reservations for the dinner must be made by Tuesday, October the 22nd. So you have a little over a month yet to get your tickets ordered. And we have to cut it off by the 22nd of October to allow our caterer enough time to prepare the amounts of food that she's going to need. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, because we're using recipes in some cases that are 100 plus years old, 150 years old maybe in some cases, you know, sometimes it takes her a while to find all the proper ingredients or to make the substitutions that she needs to make. Tickets are available at Heritage Hall. You can get those by stopping Monday through Friday at the office, or you can also get them if you want to go when the museum's open on the weekend from 1 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. They'll have tickets available there at the front desk. So you don't have to pay an admission fee to go in the museum to buy a ticket. Just walk in and tell the girl that, or whoever's at the desk, that you want to buy a ticket for the dinner, and she can supply that for you. And again, I'm not really sure if there's any tickets available for the seating with presidents, but even if you can't get a ticket with the president, it's still a great event and still a lot of fun. Event pricing, if there are VIP seats left, those are $38. $32 for general seating for adults, and $20 general seating for children if they are 5 through 12. And again, not recommended for really children much under the age of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I wouldn't even recommend bringing a child unless they were about 8 or 9 years old, because they're not going to understand what they're doing. If they are 8 or 9 and are really interested in history, it's a great educational opportunity for them. We usually get several young people there, anywhere from, you know, 8 up to 16, 17 years old. It's a great opportunity for them to learn a little bit more about their history. Unfortunately, Mike, you probably know they don't teach as much history in schools now that they did when you and I were going. So one of the missions of the Marion County Historical Society is to try to teach history through reenacting. And a lot of times we find that people are more apt to learn history if it's presented to them in this format than it is if they...
It's a fun way of learning.
Absolutely.
Like the former director of the Marion County Historical Society would have described it, she used the word edutainment, I do believe.
Well, yeah,
was that it?
Edutainment.
Yes.
That sounds good. Yeah,
yes.
Sounds good. But it's a lot easier for people than if you hand them a book and say, here, read this.
Well, one thing when I used to participate as a president, it was really cool, all the young people that would come up and try to collect
the
autographs,
yeah.
of all the presidents. Yeah. That was really fun.
And we're still doing that. You'll have a program at your seat that, of course, gives a little bit of information about each one of the presidents, not only the ones that are speaking, but the ones that are attending and not speaking. And we usually insert a page in there so that anybody, and we get adults, too, that ask mm-hmm. for the presidents to sign their program. So that's kind of fun. It's fun for the people, but it's also fun for the guys that are portraying the presidents, you know.
When they show that interest in your character,
Absolutely.
It makes your day.
And you know, the guys that do this, and you've done this, they spend some time trying to learn about the characters that they're portraying. So, and that's not to say that they can't be stumped, because, you know, not everybody can learn everything about the character they're doing. Now, I'll say that with a couple of exceptions. I don't think you're going to stump Grant.
No.
And I don't think you're going to stump Harding. Those two guys, because they concentrate specifically on those characters, those two guys know an awful lot.
And I've had both those on my show, by the way.
Yeah, and they're very good.
Yes, they are.
They're very good at what they do.
And there's a special anniversary concerning Harding coming up in 2020.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Going to be some celebrating, I'm sure.
There will be, yes.
Of his being elected.
Both at the new Harding presidential site and the Harding home, and also at the Marion County Historical Society's Heritage Hall, where we have two fine rooms of Harding memorabilia.
Yes.
So,
a beautiful display.
A lot of celebration going to be going on next year when the new center opens. But, you know, some of the guys do more than one character, and it sometimes is difficult to remember all the facts and all the information. I know when I was doing McKinley several years ago, and I've told this story before, but it's kind of a fun story. When I was doing McKinley for the very first time, the very first dinner that we did, which was 12, 13 years ago, at my table, I thought I knew McKinley well because I'm related to McKinley. He's an ancestor of mine. Mm-hmm. I thought I knew him pretty well. But somebody evidently had done some really minute studying and asked me a question that I had to come up with a real quick answer for because I didn't know the correct answer.
Mm-hmm.
But the question was, did you have a favorite parrot when you were in the White House? Well, my mind went, you know, racing because parrot. I never read anything about McKinley owning a parrot. I never read that. Where's she coming from with this? Very quickly, I said, oh, I don't like to talk about that bird. I didn't like it. He didn't like me. And that was the way I handled it. The truth of the matter is, McKinley did have a parrot as a pet when he was in the White House, and he was very fond of the bird.
Oh, my.
I missed that one totally. He was very fond of the bird. he actually named the bird the Washington Post March, because that was his favorite march. So the bird's name was the Washington Post March. Don't ask me what he called a bird. I guess, you know, maybe Washington. But he did. He was very fond of the bird. And it was the only pet that they had in the White House. So I totally missed that one. Another one I don't think you would ever be able to stump Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, or Benjamin Harrison. They're very, very good at their characters. And a couple of our new guys, Andrew Johnson, also, I think he's pretty well up on. And James Madison, I think, is pretty well up on their characters. And, gee, looking through this list, I think everyone we've got lined up for this fall pretty well knows their characters. So I don't think you'll stump them unless you really dig deep and find some crazy question like, what was that parrot's name?
What was the parrot's name?
Washington Post March.
Oh, you told me that. I'm sorry. Washington Post March. Wake me up over here.
McKinley was a big fan of John Philip Sousa, of course.
Yes.
All the marches that Sousa did.
And I've had Sousa on my show, too, by the way. I've had some pretty famous
Sousa
people.
Told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Well, a couple of the other things, one of the other things I wanted to talk about and touch base a little bit about was the schoolhouse, kind of bring everybody up to date on Lynn's school. And, of course, you know what happened to Lynn's school.
Yes.
About, roughly 6 weeks ago now, we had an unfortunate accident at Lynn's school, which is located out on Route 4 North. A semi-trailer, tractor-trailer rig lost control of the rig. And have you been out to take a look?
I have. Yeah. I was out there that day, and I've been out a few times.
Did you notice on the opposite side of the road where he'd gone off and went into
yes.
the ditch quite a ways back and rode the ditch for quite a while before he jumped the road and ended up running into, I guess you would call it, the southeast corner of mm-hmm. the building? Unfortunately, when he did that, the cab ended up inside the building. Practically
yes.
the whole cab was inside the building. Quite a bit of damage, both to the exterior and to the interior of the building. Right now, the building has been shored up, so it's okay. It's not going to fall down or anything like that. Everything's been taken out of the building. There's nothing in the building right now. They did start to do a little work on the floor, but they've had to hold up because now we're waiting on the EPA to give us permission to, or I shouldn't say permission, to tell us how much dirt has to be remediated out there because there was some diesel spilled during the process of the truck either going in or when the truck was removed one way or the other, there was mm-hmm. some diesel spilled. So that's what's holding us up right now, that and some insurance issues. But not to fear, the building will be restored.
Mm-hmm.
We've been assured by Bill Bowers that there won't be a problem in putting it back the way it was originally. My only concern initially was whether they were going to be able to match the exterior brick.
Right.
But I think there were more than one course of brick in that building, if I remember correctly. So hopefully they'll be able to salvage enough brick that wasn't damaged that they'll be able to at least make the exterior course of brick match the rest of the brick.
Right, that's important. But I think it's important to mention, too, that the driver walked away fine.
That's true. You're absolutely right.
Now, the little story I heard, tell me if this is true, that the driver got out of his cab and was locked inside the schoolhouse.
Yes, he was. In fact, there was a car. I think there were a couple of cars behind him when the accident occurred. And what I have been told was one of the Good Samaritans broke the window out on the north side of the school building and was able to open the window and help get the guy out. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because obviously the door wasn't damaged, so the door was still locked. And so there's only one door in the building, the front
right.
door. So,
right.
yeah, he was actually inside the building. But you're right, he was not hurt. Thank goodness for that. And the other story that I've heard, again, I have seen a police report, so I don't know what the report that the patrol took, but I'd heard that there was also a claim that he had a blowout.
Yeah, that's I heard also,
on
yes.
the truck, so. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the building is structurally sound. Bill and his crew have put up some beams to hold on each corner there of the building, so if you want to drive out and take a look at it, you can't really see a whole lot because they've got one of those fences around it with a tarp that covers up the fence, but you can kind of peek through a couple of holes in there and see a little bit of what went on, although there's a tarp covering the building as well. So, but you can still go out and take a look if you want. Just be careful. Don't try to get inside the fence and get hurt.
Right, right.
There's signs up there, no trespassing. But you can pull in the lot, and you can look through the windows on the north side and kind of see the inside of the building and see what it looks like. But the front chalkboard, I don't think was damaged. I don't think the chalkboard on the north side of the building was damaged. I really couldn't see the one on the south side of the building, but
I understand. I've talked to Brandy Wilson recently, who's the director of the Marion County Historical Society, and somebody has donated a board with a frame around it from another one-room schoolhouse to replace the one that was damaged.
Good. Well, I just briefly had a very short conversation with Brandy on Friday. And didn't really talk about the school that much, other than she told me what was holding us up right now. But and the reason for that was, I'll move into the last thing I wanted to talk about, since we've got, what, about 15 minutes?
Yes, about 14 minutes right now.
My wife and I just, and actually my wife and I and Benjamin Harrison and his wife, Caroline, just got back last week from a trip to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Ooh.
And I'll tell you, I had never been there before. Well, I shouldn't say I'd never been there before, because I, as memory serves me, in 1959 or 1960, I took a trip with my mother and my two aunts to Florida, and we went through the Smokies and went through Cherokee, but I would have only been like 9 years old, so I don't remember a whole lot about it. I do remember, and this is what the bigger shock was to me, and of course I've heard this from people who have been there over the years, but when I went through Gatlinburg back in 1959-1960, there was one motel in Gatlinburg.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were maybe two places to eat and one traffic light.
Right.
And we stayed overnight in that motel because my aunts were both golfers, and I was golfing then too, a young golfer, and we played golf on a golf course that was way up on a mountain, right overlooking the town of Gatlinburg. And that's about all I remember of Gatlinburg, because that's about all there was. We went on through Pigeon Forge, mm-hmm. and Pigeon Forge had no traffic lights, no motel, and no place to eat.
Well, thanks to Dolly, that's all changed.
Yeah, so, of course, we drove into Gatlinburg because we were actually renting a cabin that was right at the outskirts of Gatlinburg on Roaring Fork, if you're familiar with that part of the park. In fact, our cabin sat right on Roaring Fork. It was absolutely a great cabin. We were so lucky that we were able to get the place we got. It was totally isolated, back off the beaten path. So we were really away from that clutter of what you see in Gatlinburg with all that commotion going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So the first day we arrived, of course, we went to our cabin first, and it was about 7 o'clock in the evening by the time we got there, and we retired from the drive. That's a long drive down there. It's almost 600 miles.
Yes, it is.
So we were pretty worn out. So we didn't actually go into Gatlinburg until the next day, and we really drove through Gatlinburg to get to the visitor center on the other end of Gatlinburg before we started our hiking activities. So going through Gatlinburg was real sticker shock for me.
I'm sure.
Oh, my word.
I'm sure.
Now, this is September when school has already started back, and I really thought that the crowds would be depleted, which, according to Tom and Carolyn, they were depleted, but there were still a lot of people on the streets. And they've been through Gatlinburg during the summer, and they say it's like five or six times worse than what it was when we were there. And I could hardly believe that, because people were walking shoulder to shoulder on the sidewalks through Gatlinburg. It was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's like, what are all these people doing here? School's back in session. Shouldn't you be home with your kids? But people are still traveling, and I guess people take their kids out of school, even if it's the early part of the school year, if they want to take a vacation. So, but spent very little time in Gatlinburg, just going through it and back through the other end. We did the top tourist spots for the Smoky Mountains. We went up to visit the Walker sisters' cabin.
Okay.
The Walker sisters, of course, were one of the last people that left the Smoky Mountains. The last sister died in 1964, I believe. They had lived in their cabin since they were infants. They were born there. They never had electricity. They never had indoor plumbing. They never had a paved road to their cabin. In fact, it was like a mile and a half hike off of the park parking lot just to get back to their cabin. But in 1934, when the Great Smoky Mountain National Park was declared a park by Congress, and Franklin Roosevelt made a trip down to Newfound Gap, where they built an overlook there, and he gave a speech there about the new park system. He actually made a trip to the Walker's cabin to talk to their father, who was still living at the time, about a life lease on the property. A lot of people that owned cabins in what became the park, what, some 500,000 acres, whatever it is, sold their properties to the U.S. government. A lot of them moved out at the time, but some of them were given life leases. And the life lease thing started with Mr. Walker.
Okay.
He didn't want to leave his property, and he said he would only negotiate with the President of the United States.
Oh, wow.
So Franklin D. Roosevelt went to his home way up in the mountains and negotiated this life lease with him. So that the last of his daughters was able to live there until she died, which occurred in 1964. There were several other people that took the same deal that didn't want to leave. They didn't want to give up their cabins, even though they had no electricity, no indoor plumbing, that type of thing. They did take the life leases. And the actual last life lease expired in 2001.
Oh.
So there was still somebody living
wow.
up in the park in 2001 that had a life lease that was given to them through the arrangements by the federal government in 1934. So I found that really, really interesting. Did very much enjoy the hike up to the Walker sisters' cabin. There's a small cemetery there at the beginning of the road and a schoolhouse there that they attended school at. I think there were something like 48 people buried there. A lot of infants buried in that cemetery, of course. Children that died either stillborn or died within the first two or three months of their life. Very sad. But amazing that those six girls and two brothers, there were eight children in the Walker family, walked a mile and a half downhill and a mile and a half back uphill every day to go to this one-room schoolhouse. Absolutely amazing. And a lot of what they walked downhill was still uphill because they were going up and down through these ravines, you know, to go to school. But it's an absolutely gorgeous place. Newfound Gap, found that absolutely fantastic. Got a chance to stand in the same spot that Franklin Roosevelt stood in 1934 when he gave his speech. Got my picture taken there.
Really?
Yep. There was also part of the trailhead for the Appalachian Trail that crosses through where Newfound Gap is. So got to stand on part of the Appalachian Trail, walked a few feet on it, not 2,200 and some miles that the Appalachian Trail encompasses, 2,200 miles that encompasses. Starts in Georgia and goes all the way to Maine, and a lot of people have done that, have actually walked that entire distance. But I walked a few feet on it, my wife, got our picture taken there. One of the days we went up to Clingman's Gap, Clingman's Dome, which is the highest mountain peak in the Smoky Mountains, 6,643 feet. We drove up to that, and then there's a quarter-mile walk up to the observation tower. And I got to tell you, Mike, it's about I would say it's at least a 25% to 45% grade uphill.
Oh, wow.
It's almost straight
good
up.
For the heart.
Excellent for the heart. Quarter mile walk up to get to the observation tower, and then when you get to the observation tower, you've got another probably football field's length to walk around this circular thing that takes you up to the dome. But when you get up there, it's a breathtaking view. I mean, it's absolutely a breathtaking view. You're at the top of the world. It is the Clingman's Dome is the second highest peak in the North America, second highest peak in the North America, the eastern side of North America. Yeah.
And what's the highest?
Mount Mitchell, which is located in Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Mount Mitchell, and it's not that much higher than what Clingman's Dome is. So Terry and I both got T-shirt after we made the trek up and made the trek down. We stopped at their little visitor center there, and we got a T-shirt that says we survived Klingman's Doom. and we wore them proudly the other day. So, but that was absolutely awe-inspiring. I got to say, the probably the most interesting day we had was the day we went to Cherokee. And I wasn't particularly going to Cherokee, which, by the way, also changed a lot. When I went through Cherokee, there were a couple of buildings and a motel there. Now that's built
I'm
up
sure,
as well.
I'm sure.
But before we went to Cherokee, Tom and Carolyn said, we're going to take a drive down Balsam Mountain Road. Oh, okay. Now, Balsam Mountain Road is not a paved road. It's a gravel road.
Okay.
And it's one way, and it's only about 8 to 10 feet wide in any given spot. And on, of course, one side is part of the mountain that you're still hugging. The other side is 1/8 of a big drop-off.
Oh, my.
It took us an hour and 38 minutes to go 11 miles down Balsam Mountain Road.
Really?
Unbelievable.
Now, is it just one way, or can people come from the other direction?
It's only one way. You have to start at the top and go down. But now, here's the kicker. We got within about a mile of the bottom of it, rounded this curve, and here comes this big pickup truck the wrong way.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Tom rolls the window down. He says to the guy, he says, do you know you're going the wrong way? The guy says, no. Is this one way? Yeah, and you're going the wrong way. Fortunately, there was a little bit of a wide spot in the road. He was able to inch over to the inside. We were able to go around him, and we went on down and told him he better try to turn around. So we don't know whether he turned around or whether he went the other 10.5 miles up the road. We get to the bottom of the road, and we get out of the car. We turn around, and here's three signs. Do not enter. One way. Stop. This guy drove right through all three of those signs to go the wrong way on this mountain road. Can you believe it? So that was our most exciting thing. Now, my wife's most exciting adventure, she rode the incline, those little ski lift chairs, up to the top of the mountain right there in Gatlinburg.
Mm-hmm.
And just about a year or two ago, they built the longest suspension bridge in the United States that crosses the two peaks. She went up the incline and walked across that bridge and back across.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I couldn't.
I don't
do
know
it.
If I could do that either.
I can't do it. I can't do heights. And halfway across the bridge, she says, there's a 8 foot, 6-8 foot section of it that's glass.
Oh.
So you can stand there.
I would probably be frozen there.
Look straight down. Well, she said by the time she got the other side, her heart rate was way up and her palms were sweaty. And she had to sit down and rest before going back. So you not only have to go across one way, you have to turn around and go back.
That's true.
Yeah. And it's not a sturdy bridge. It bounces when you walk on it, and there's cables. And there's nothing on the sides but a couple of cables.
Oh, my.
And she said there's kids going across it. I'd be scared to death. My kid would slip between the cables and fall to his death several thousand feet below.
I wouldn't even get near that bridge.
Yeah, I tell you, she's got guts to do it.
She does.
I can't.
I give her credit.
Me too, absolutely. So it was a very wonderful trip. I would highly recommend it to anybody that's never been in the Smoky Mountains. The only thing I would say, unless you're a shopper or you want that chaos, stay out of Gatlinburg.
Sure.
Try to get a cabin outside the town or camp. But if you like that kind of thing, that's your place. Absolutely. Hey, Mike, I really appreciate coming tonight.
Oh.
And hope to see you at our last barn dance in September over at Malabar Farm.
Yeah. And we have a half a minute. When is that barn dance again, and time? And
it will be the last Saturday of September, which I think you said is the 28th.
Mm-hmm, it is.
They always start at 7 o'clock. They run until 10, and it's $1 to get in the barn. If you don't know how to square dance, they'll teach you. They do teaching sessions before they actually...
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.